Tell everybody who you are, where you're from.
James Victoria, I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I started out as a graphic designer, but I'm moving into a different arena now, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's okay.
Is this because we've got to keep evolving because things are moving so fast?
I think I'm in a natural progression that happens with a little bit of success in your field and a little bit of maturity, where I'm realizing in the design world, I think I serve a better role at this point as a mentor and as an advisor and as a teacher.
I guess this is where your dinner party is coming.
It's called a dinner series, and it was basically the craziest and funnest idea that we can have in the studio. And it's a one-week workshop, and we put out the word to the world, and we take like 5 to 7 people from literally Colombia, South America, from Turkey, from Canada, from Texas, and they work 5 days in the studio with me on not specifically really graphic design projects, but we use the design experience to kind of pull out from the individual. We use the term to illuminate the individual. And then every evening we go to a private restaurant with a private chef, and we have an amazing meal, and I invite one of my luminary friends, like a filmmaker, Gary Huswit, Stefan Sagmeister, who's a dear pal of mine, is coming by, a friend of mine who custom makes hatchets. So it's kind of a diverse group of people to have dinner with. It's kind of nuts because it was just basically, you know, can we invite people over and talk about our shared experiences and expose them to some high-level friends of mine? And what's happened is these people have gotten set on fire. I mean, we had 5 in the fall, and I'm still mentoring them, and they send me Christmas presents and birthday presents. And one of them is coming back to do the workshop again with us this year. Another one has come back to serve as our marketing and promotional guru. It's just crazy. Part of it is because what we try to do is get them excited again about what they got their degree in or what they wanted to always do. You know, this kind of both hands-on and very, very intellectual part of being a graphic designer. You know, they find out that they're sitting in gray cubicles at jobs they hate to buy shit they don't need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we kind of have to remind them along the way, which all of us need, that there is another way. Sometimes we deal in hard choices, and sometimes during the workshop we deal in tears, part of it, and it's fine.
Sounds expensive.
Mm-hmm. It's expensive, and it's supposed to be expensive. One is to keep out the riffraff. You know, keep out students, basically. Yeah. And the other one is that we pay everybody, and we have entertainment every night, and we want to do a high-end experience. But I think the reason they are attracted to this thing is because I have a reputation of kind of fighting the good fight and trying to be one of the people who gets to do what exactly he was put on the planet to do. We work very hard at the studio. We draw a very hard line about what we will do and what we don't do. You know, we don't turn down many jobs in the design field, but it seems like the last 2 that we've turned down were the $120,000 jobs that we just thought were total bullshit. I mean, that's a hard line to draw. You know, we want a high level of creativity in the work, and we want to work with smart, brave clients. And there are some out there, and it's marvelous when you find them. And when we find them, we hold on to them tight, and we send them candy and chocolates, and we love the clients we work with.
I've seen some of your posters, especially the anti-inspiration posters, which are inspirational in their own right. You seem to talk on a slightly different frequency that does cut through the bullshit and get straight to the root of the matter. How can people do that?
What we try to do is tell the truth. The tone in those posters was the tone of a stern but cool father. And I got that from years of teaching and now 15 years of being a dad. And I think what people find very refreshing is when they come up upon a piece of graphic design, and it doesn't even matter the format that it takes, but a piece that tells the truth in a very frank, honest, possibly even funny way, because we don't get enough of that. It's refreshing. It's also sometimes difficult to find those clients that will give a thumbs up to that.
So there's somebody sat somewhere, anywhere, listening to this, and they may never get to sit with you around a table. Give them a nugget, a secret weapon, a password to unlock some kind of trick. Let's not call it a trick. That cheapens it.
That's a big part of it, is it can't be a trick. It really can't be a trick. It has to be you. And I think the one thing that me as a student of culture and a student of history have learned from the people I respect, and it could be musicians, or it could be writers, or it could be filmmakers, or it could be anybody, I look at their work, and what they've done is they're getting paid to be the person they were meant to be. Meaning, there's a fancy term I say, that in the particular lies the universal. So when Louis C.K. makes some joke about his sweaty balls, it's funny to us because he's being extremely honest, and we see something of ourselves in him. James Joyce did the same thing in Dubliners. Filmmakers don't make films to make you happy. They make films to make them happy, and we love them for it. So it's that.
Thank you very much. What are you going to take away from Do?
Oh, my God. This is like going back to school, brother. This is awesome. I love it.
I'm sat in the pub connected to Forrest with James Bridle, and I've just realised I haven't bought you a beer yet. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. A little thirsty, but otherwise good.
What were you talking about here?
I was talking about all the books that I've ever made, really. I wanted to go back quite a long way and tell the story of a long process of making that's kind of got me to here in order to tell myself the story as much as anyone else of kind of what maybe I might do next.
It was fascinating to see how much detail you put into some of your really early stuff, the contents pages, publisher's logo. How old were you when you were doing that?
Very first one, I think I was about 6. The one with quite as much metadata, I think I was probably 9 or 10.
The metadata that was longer than the story.
Yes, absolutely. I was already the publisher of those things rather than the writer. I think that was where my heart was.
So many conferences and think tanks and people trying to work out the future of publishing, the future of the physical book in itself. Can you give us a snippet on what you think is going to happen?
It's always been a kind of process of trying to understand these things by making them. You kind of only really have a deep understanding of these things when you actually do them and you understand the processes that are required. And in the doing of that, you then understand more of it. You usually have a reason for doing it in the first place. You have a reason for continuing it and you discover whole new reasons for having done it once you're done.
You showed some beautiful objects. They had great covers. I imagine awesome tactility. Some print on demand because urgency and immediacy, you know, being important nowadays. Yet you're okay with the Kindle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all these things are ways of understanding the idea of the book. By putting it into a physical form, you can draw out certain qualities of this kind of idealized book. For me, the book is not a purely physical object, and it's not a purely digital object. It's always a process of negotiation between writer and reader and all the social things that happen around that and the experiences we have with books. And you only really understand that if you kind of constantly move between the different formats and see what sticks and what's different in each one.
One thing I miss is the book cover. There are some faux book covers you can get for Kindles. Wouldn't it be great to create an open source design for a book cover that folds around my Kindle? Yet, the moment I buy the ebook from you, I give you my email address and you post me a paper cover that I can slot into it.
I know it bothers a lot of people. The one you hear as well is that you can't chat someone up in a cafe who's reading a Kindle because you don't know what they're reading. It's a really powerful kind of social thing. So there's tons of stuff that's kind of gone that way. People kind of complain about album covers. There'll still be an art to creating those things and connections to them, but they belong in the physical world, and there's other qualities of the book that I think are more important immediately to transfer to the digital, which are around kind of note-taking and mark-making in the book itself. People do put paper jackets on these things, and actually the other thing that they do is they put the wrong cover on books. What's something that people have done forever and no one talks about, which is that they'll put the kind of impressive looking hardback jacket on whatever kind of racy or cheap novel that they're reading. These things are always social displays, anything that's kind of pointed outward in that way. And yeah, we're going to have to think of ways to replace those, absolutely. But it will be something slightly different, I'm quite sure.
What's your thoughts on DRM, and there's been more and more companies freeing books up with DRM on them?
It's going to get interesting. I think it's the next level in this kind of ongoing war between publishers and Amazon in particular, in that several of the large publishers are starting to talk about dropping DRM. And that feels like something, a way that they could kind of get back at Amazon to some extent. It's naturally what will kind of happen once we kind of get over the stage of being restrictive about selling books and make it easier for people to buy books. We've seen in all these models that the better you make your sales processes, the less people worry about piracy. It's just stupid industries that haven't caught up with that yet, and that's naturally going to happen at some point in the future.
How are you going to future-proof your job? Are you perceived as a middleman at the moment?
I'm kind of perceived as Cassandra. I've been saying the same things about the future for some time, but no one listens, which is fine and lovely and all good. And I'm quite happy with that. I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing. Like, books are always at the root of everything that I do. They're not going to go away. They may change form in all kinds of ways, but as long as I get to carry on being with them, having experiences with them, and sometimes making them, I'm going to be quite happy.
James, where can people go to find out more about what you do and your future projects?
Book2.org.
With the number 2?
With the letters TWO.
Okay. James, thank you very much. Can I get you a beer?
Yes, you certainly can. Thank you.
Oh, that's it. I've packed my bag and I've emptied the tent. Is it possible to leave on a high knowing that I'm leaving the Do Lectures a day early? Yes, it is. Needs must. I had a phone call saying pretty much the whole family's been taken down with gastroenteritis and I'm needed. And there are lots and lots of things that are reaffirmed when hanging around the really amazing people at Duke. One of those things is family, and I am going to go home and look after them. I'm so glad I got the chance to do so many things, including the workshop I've just finished. It's only a short walk to the car park. Got my pack on my back, got my satchel on my side, and I've got a head full of stories I've yet to share, and memories, and ideas, and learnings, for want of a better word. So the story is obviously going to continue, and I'm hoping that the people that came to my workshop will assist in recording that and sharing it outside of these hedgerows and these trees and these canvas walls, so that I can continue to curate what's going on, so Do 2012 can kind of have a bit of an online record. It's interesting when you're creating something from your perspective and concentrating on your own interactions, because in a way you can personalise the tale, and many people's tales come from the same perspective. It's this meandering, random, spontaneous, serendipitous journey through people you're bumping off, learning from, connecting with. You never know where it's going to go, and the only kind of constant is this passage of time. Some reconnections, some initial impressions that get rubbed out straight away on second meetings, and a breaking down of barriers. A fantastic time that I'm going to sit and reflect and be thankful I've had the time that I have here. 4.5 hours-ish in the car. And I'm going to try not to think about all of the stuff I know is happening tomorrow, some really amazing stuff, because hopefully I'll be able to catch up with some of it later on. I'm going to keep in touch with some of these people and some of the amazing speakers. From now on, I'll be driving, so don't be surprised if I'm quiet for a bit. Thanks.